Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Plants and Policies podcast. My name is Ina Maria Tonchescu, and I'm a managing director at Canadians for Responsible Food Policy. Today, I'm just alone because Maddie Youngman's actually doing a lot more research for you. They'll be back next week. And this one can really just be done on me. I'm on my own this time, okay? Now, I want to just sort of explain why I decided to write this podcast for you. First of all, one of the biggest things that I want to sort of touch on is the disinformation that we see. We recently actually had a selling sustainability panel called Animal Agriculture's Disinformation Tactics. And I'm very much inspired to continue having this conversation. I think this is very important for us to, as a public, to know more about the information that we're fed and how we've come to know the information that we do, how we've come to sort of develop a culture of sorts, how we eat, what we think about our food, the relationship that we have to our food. So I wanted to talk a little bit about that and also sort of touch on the importance of public education campaigns and why I'm such an advocate for them. So I'm going to hop right in, and I will ask everyone, don't forget to follow and subscribe. Don't forget to support CRFP because we do some amazing work and we absolutely need all of your support. Okay, I'm going to hop right in. I want to talk a little bit about the public education campaigns, but I want to give you some background first, okay? For decades, we have been conditioned to think that meat is protein and that protein is meat. You know, the old conversation of, oh goodness, you eat plant-based and how do you get your protein? There's a reason for that. The more you're taught that you need something, the more society is going to think that you need it, right? That's why you hear it from all sorts. You hear it from your parents, you hear it from school, you hear it online, everywhere. When animal agriculture was industrialized in the 1930s, which means factory farms began existing, we suddenly could produce a lot more animals for consumption than ever before. Factory farming really came into existence to cut costs and produce more. It was even in the 1920s that they started experimenting, keeping many animals and in confined spaces to see how much production can increase. And so now there's this opportunity for everything to be factory farmed. And I'm not sure if you know this, but about 90% of the world's meat and dairy comes from a factory farm setting. They're very, very small scale farms actually still hanging around. And they're actually dwindling down by the second because farmers, especially in Canada, are actually looking to retire without a succession plan. So now you have a bunch of meat to sell, and now you need people to buy this meat. And so what does industry do? And by the way, folks, we call industry the folks from animal agriculture, the factory farm folks, okay? Well, they begin to try to convince you that you absolutely need it. In fact, small side story, but one of my family members, when I told them that I was now eating a plant-based diet, began crying, thinking that I was going to die. The belief that you need this to survive is much more than tradition and culture. I believe it's conditioning. We were told that our ancestors ate meat, and now studies, of course, debunk that and tell us that our ancestors only ate meat once in a blue moon when they were actually able to hunt. And for the most part, they ate nuts, fruits, and grains. And I actually have a full quote that I'd like to read to you, okay? This is quoting from the National Geographic. There's been a consistent story about hunting defining us, and that meat made us human, says Amanda Henry, a paleobiologist at the Max Planck Institute for Evolutionary Anthropology in Leipzig. Frankly, I think that misses half of the story. They want meat, sure, but what they actually live on is plant foods. What's more, she found starch granules from plants on fossil teeth and stone tools, which suggests humans may have been eating grains as well as tubers for at least 100,000 years, long before to have evolved the ability to tolerate them, end quote. So now we've had this propaganda of got milk and that milk makes your bones strong, even though dairy consumption has been associated with so many bad illnesses. Quoting from the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, milk and other dairy products are the top source of saturated fat in the American diet, contributing to heart disease, type 2 diabetes, and Alzheimer's disease. Studies have also linked dairy to an increased risk of breast, ovarian, and prostate cancers. End quote. So How are people still consuming so much meat and so much dairy, even though all of the studies are consistently debunking the propaganda? And I have an opinion on why. In 2018, a Harvard article exposed the dairy industry in Canada as a cartel, quote unquote. A discovery of their documents uncovered that they had massive strategies on how to coordinate with politicians, who to lobby, who will be a good representative, and so many more details that really makes you sit back and think about just how involved industry is in the decision-making from the top. And if you're Canadian, you might remember the once upon a time leader of the Federal Conservative Party was featured drinking milk out of a carton. And even that was actually outlined in the leaked documents from the dairy industry. You might also wonder why industry was at the table making decisions or influencing decisions on the Canadian Food Guide, and it was only in 2019 that only scientists and health professionals were behind the planning of the Canadian Food Guide. That's why you saw a massive shift towards plant-based diet encouragement and a giant move away from meat and dairy. In fact, dairy was almost entirely removed from the food guide plate that everyone is, you know, sort of familiar with and put as a sort of listing of what you can have if you were to consume, with plant yogurts being right beside them. I believe they actually do say plant yogurt specifically. So as Canadians, we have been consistently told, even through governmental sources like the Food Guide, to have meat and dairy in our diets in much larger amounts than what the latest Food Guide says, because industry was involved. We are also consistently bombarded with marketing ads on any sort of media platforms, including social media, commercials on TV, and it doesn't stop there. There's a campaign that is going on right now at SickKids. Make Milk Matter More, getting a game out of kids eating milk and cookies that we actually recently posted about that on our social media. We see large sponsorships that are present everywhere with industry associations' names slapped in big letters. We are literally surrounded by messaging of eating meat and dairy. The ads on TV depict meals with friends and families and everyone is smiling and so on. Then there are quote unquote research articles that will come out, or opinion pieces or news pieces that come out written or sponsored by authors who, you guessed it, work for industry, who will talk about how soy is bad for you, for example, even though 90% of the world's soy is actually fed to meat and dairy. And so it's actually interesting to me, and you can actually do this yourself, always go back to the author and always follow the money when it comes to anything that is supposed to influence your decision making. That is actually something I'll touch on a little bit later as well, okay? Then there's this other side of things where people are conditioned to think that eating plant-based is actually expensive, and that you can't get all of your nutrition, and that it's not healthy, even though hundreds and hundreds of articles are coming out regularly depicting a much more beautiful picture of what eating plant-based looks like. So we're faced with this massive undertaking of trying to fight decades-long conditioning and continuing to fight this conditioning as the conversation changes from the nutritional aspect or the nutritional benefits of meat and dairy and eggs to now the conditioning that's coming with being told that meat, dairy, and eggs are sustainable. Now you'll see ads about the pastures. Now you'll see new industry-sponsored research and articles on the sustainability of these industries, because they're realizing they now have to do the same thing, the same conditioning over and over again. And yes, people are buying into it. So that's where public education campaigns come in. Now, I'll stop for a second and say this. We do not make profits like industry does. In fact, we are mostly nonprofit organizations trying to bring the truth to society. We do not have $120 million to maintain relationships in Ottawa like the dairy industry has every single year, according to that Harvard article, by the way. We do not have the money to consistently feed people marketing ads and commercials on scientific evidence of eating plant-based and reducing your meat, dairy, and egg intakes. We go through the channels that are affordable and possible. We depend on grants. We depend on donors who believe in the cause. And so I'll always, and that's why I mentioned earlier, always follow the money. You will notice that those who are genuinely interested in driving change, saving this planet and all of its inhabitants, will often be the ones that are not making any money. I myself am a volunteer at this organization, and everyone else is as well, aside from one intern that is covered by research grants. So what we do have, if not the money and the resources that would take to maintain $120 million worth of relationships in Ottawa, what we do have is the opportunity to lobby government officials to do the right thing and use the Canadian Food Guide, which is already scientifically based, to simply show Canadians what the science actually was behind the 2019 Canadian Food Guide release. What we do have is an opportunity to take already existent information and simply deliver it to Canadians. Because the biggest problem that I see between government and Canadians is that we never speak to Canadians in an effective manner. Government calls for consultations that none of us know about. We find out about this last minute, okay? We're not all tuned in to subscribe to the federal government newsletter. I'm not sure when exists, and I'm not sure that any of you know that you can subscribe to updates in many different departments of the federal government, and that you can ask questions and you can fill out freedom of information requests and ATIP requests. Public education campaigns don't cost a lot. They take a little bit of effort and time, which is something that Canadians for Responsible Food Policy, for example, is willing to put in, as I'm sure many other organizations would be happy to contribute to. And yes, there are many other ways of changing consumer behavior, like nudging, which is something that we've slightly touched on and we'll be touching on more and more as time goes on, as this is a huge research focus for us. But before consumer change, it is my opinion that we first need to combat the decades-long conditioning that I've spoken about and almost simultaneously begin to do the other things that come, like making food more accessible for everyone, like incentivizing farmers' transitions to plant-based food growth, like environmental labeling, which is nudging, and so on. I see public education campaigns as a cog in the wheel to make this whole movement turn. Because people have spent a long time thinking that if they do not get their meat today, they will die of protein deficiency. I personally have been waiting for this protein deficiency to kick in for about 6 years now, but what can I say? I'm still here. Okay. With public education campaigns, we are taking government support and sort of casting a wide net on bringing this information to a population of diverse people who come from different countries where they too have had different kinds of conditioning or even access to food. The Canadian Food Guide is a great first step, but it's an asset that hasn't been fully utilized. So the question is, how many people know what is on the food guide? How many people know how many times plant-based is mentioned? How many people know that recipes exist and that examples are given for meal ideas that are predominantly plant-based? How many people are subscribed to receive updates and meal ideas in their inboxes? As an immigrant to Canada, and I've been here now 22 years or so, 23, I can tell you that these tools are not given to you. And unless you're specifically looking for them, you will not find them. So what we want to do with public education campaigns is bring those tools to everyone else through ads, through marketing campaigns, through social media, through Google Ads, and so on. The decision on what to eat today is very much in the power of people's hands, unless, of course, they are in a situation where they have no access to food or have no choice. I want to recognize that there is a reality like that for people in Canada that more and more are facing nowadays. But the majority of us, however, we do have that choice every day. And many of us make decisions based on the conditioning that I've spoken about. What if we had all of the facts right here in our faces? What if we were given the whole picture? What if people actually knew everything they needed to know about eating plant-based instead of just knowing that red meat is linked to carcinogens or for example, what if it was more than that? What if it was red meat links to carcinogenic, things? And also here's a replacement for red meat. Here is access to recipe sites. Here is a whole 3 weeks meal plan for 1, 2, 3, 4 people. One of the things that I see that I think we are missing is the solution to the problem that we consistently keep talking about. We can tell people eat alongside the food guide to save the environment. Like, for example, the government's Canadians Are Raising the Bar campaign. But do people know exactly what to buy? Do people have a picture of the food guide in front of their faces at all times? Absolutely not. And also, do people know how to make meals out of the food guide? Like, I know folks, for example, who absolutely detest tofu, okay? But if you all come to my home one day, which would be a lot of people who listen in on this, maybe I should make this like an event at a restaurant or something. But if you come and see what my tofu recipes look like, you probably wouldn't even be able to tell that it's tofu, because it's a matter of knowing how to cook it. Many people do not have the access, the tools, the knowledge. They do not know where to start. What if we could bring public education campaigns, decondition everyone from the culture of eating meat, dairy, and eggs to survive? And then what if we actually told them that they need, in order for them to survive, they need to eat alongside the Canadian Food Guide, which is a predominantly plant-based diet? And then what if we actually gave them the solutions on how? What if? That is my chat with you today, everyone. I would really actually love to hear what you think. And so I invite you again to, first of all, send us a message to hello@responsiblefoodpolicy.ca, comment or send us a direct message on our social media platforms. Of course, you can subscribe to our newsletters for updates. And of course, last but definitely not least, sign the Canadian Food Guide petition that looks to do exactly what I've been talking about here and introduce public education campaigns in Canada. Thank you for listening. Of course, again, you can catch us on Spotify, on YouTube, Podbean, Apple, iTunes, Podcast Addict, Samsung, and so many more. Thanks for listening, and bye for now.